This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the June 6th edition of Invest Talk. Above average investing for the average investor, making smarter choices is what we're all about. Try to, anyways. The best choice usually involves an investment in time, by the way, doing your homework. We try to point out, the good information that's out there. I try to point you in that direction to help you put, make the better decisions on investing. It's not easy. There's so much information these days. It makes it more difficult, not less difficult. You would think that all the information out there would make it easier, but it does not. Not that many years ago, the information was not available, and that was also difficult. Either way, it's difficult. Now, what kind of investor are you? What kind of stock investor are you? Because that's pretty darn important. If you're going to be successful, you have to understand your method of investing. I worry that most people's method of investing says, oh, that's a good stock, I think I'll buy it. That's not a good way to do it. It could work, I'm not saying it's not going to work, but you have to first discover, well, what is those things that you want to invest in? What is your strategy? Do you most people don't have one, but you got to develop a strategy, or else you're going to feel very abused when the market crashes, or your strategy all of a sudden doesn't work. Well, how do you know if it's working or not if you don't even know you have a strategy? You got to be disciplined. Now, in recent months, we've been talking about people we need to start shifting to value investing. That's a strategy, shifting to value investing. Well, what other kind of investings are there? Well, value investing, of course, you're looking at those stocks, those companies that have a price for their stock that's undervalued when you start comparing them with their fundamentals. You look at them from the fundamental perspective and then look at the price of the stock. The stock is cheap compared to those fundamentals. Whether you look at it based purely on the fundamentals or the fundamentals and history. Growth investing, you're just focused on growth of sales and earnings. You want very large, huge numbers in growth in sales and earnings. They're very, very different than value. Very few growth stocks have value because everybody's bidding them up because of the growth. And then there's income investing. You're income oriented. And maybe you want to do that because you're in retirement. Those are the three basic kinds of investors. And you can combine the strategies. It doesn't all have to be just one strategy that you've decided. You can combine them, but you just have to realize, here's my growth stocks, here's my value stocks, here's my income producing equities, which could be stocks and bonds. And each one has its own place. How much of your portfolio? You decide that. Anyways, you need to make decisions on what kind of investor you want to be and develop that strategy and then understanding that strategy, implementing it. Now, do you want to talk about income investing or maybe some other objectives in investing? Be happy to talk to you. Our listener line is always open, 888-99-CHART. You can call it anytime you want. We're live from 4 to 5 Pacific time. So let's take this question that came in before today's program.
Hey, Steve or Justin. This is Chris from St. Louis. Love your podcast. I had a question. Justin, you mentioned the other day about a short squeeze or identifying a short squeeze on Restoration Hardware. I guess if you could just explain that and how do you identify it and what's it look like? Thanks a lot. Bye.
It's pretty difficult to identify a short squeeze. It is difficult. He was talking about Restoration Hardware and it operates 85 retail stores. First of all, you need to understand what a short is. A short is where you predict that the stock is going to go down. So you have investors saying, betting that the stock is going to go down. And to enter a short position, they borrow somebody else's stock and sell it. So they're selling the stock short In other words, they're short the stud. They don't have it. They were short it. They never had it. They were short. They just borrowed somebody else and sold it. Now, they have to give it back to that person someday. There's no day. It's not like options. It doesn't run out or expire or anything. You can stay in a short for as long as you want. Okay, so technically you can. But, okay, so investors are believing that the stock is going to go down. And let's say more and more investors believe that Restoration Hardshore stock is going to go down. Well, a short squeeze is, what if it doesn't go down? What if it starts to go up? Okay, if you're in the short position, you're losing money as it goes up, right? Because remember, someday you have to give it back, and if the price is going up, you're going to have to buy it back at a higher price to give it back. What if that continues to go up? Up and up and up and up. Then a squeeze happens when the stock price keeps going up, and now the shorts are starting to buy the stock back to give back, to get out of their short position because they're losing so much money. Their action of buying the stock drives the stock higher. And therefore, they're squeezing other shorts. They're squeezing them out. They now have to buy. More and more shorter people are shorting have to buy to give the stock back. So you look at the number of short positions to look for a possible short squeeze, and RH, or Restoration Hardshore, still has 7 days of trading in shorts. The volume is 11 million shares average a day. That means they have 77 million shares short. How can they have that many short when there's not many shares in the float? There's only 30 million. That's why he's thinking it's got to be a short squeeze. That, you know, people, that's why it was driven up and then it fell. But, you know, you still might be having why it's moving back up again. He's speculating. No one really knows. We can only speculate by the number of shorts and the action of the stock. We don't really know for a fact. A warning for index investors. That's one of our talking points today. A warning for index investors. Matter of fact, this warning is from someone who beats the drum of investing by indexing. And he's really smart. Bogle, the founder of Vanguard. He's the father of index investing, and he thinks everybody should index investing. And he's the one that's talking about a warning for index investors. What is he warning about? That's what we're going to discuss today. It's one of them, anyways. Also, I'm going to give you some truisms out there for investors. What are some of the truisms that you don't have to agree or disagree? These are just true. So I got several of them I want to talk about. Did you see what Macy's did? Fell 8% today. Well, the big box stores, as I've warned you many, many, many times on this show, don't invest them. So what are some of the other stores that are either bankrupt or having financial troubles? I have a list I'm going to read off to you of stores in bankruptcy. And then, more importantly, those that have the possibility of debt default. Now, that's a long list, and I'm just picking out some of the big names. And Apple Computer, is betting on three technologies you're going to adopt, that will be adopted mainstream. Three. You know, Apple did not invent the portable phone. They didn't invent it. So, you know, they didn't invent the PC. They didn't invent it. So they just take advantage of technologies and they make them better. And they're betting on three technologies. And well, let's see if we'll talk about it, see if you agree. The market was down today. The Dow was down 46 points. The Nasdaq down 21 points, and the S&P down 7 points. 2 days in a row, no big deal, but 2 days in a row for the market on the downside. We'll see. We'll see where, you know, it feels like some of the investors are starting to lose a little faith out there about the Trump possibility of tax cuts and health care reform and infrastructure spending. We're starting to lose a little faith on that. And all that, all those three things are already really built into the stock market. So the longer wait, so we're in May now. He's been president for, you know, four plus months. We're in June, I'm sorry, we're in June. So middle of what? January, February, March, April, May. We're looking at, you know, he's had time, and it doesn't look like that too many things are very close to getting approved. And I think we're seeing the investors lose a little faith. And it, to me, it seemed like it maybe started this losing a bit of faith in Trump several months ago, not just now, not just recently. I'm thinking it more likely started back in March, because that's when you started to see the market kind of slow down, this rise up. Then you got a little faith here coming in June after that big one down day. But we'll, I just don't think, you know, investors will get tired of waiting. You can't have those promises and never get implemented. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Lots to talk about today. What comes first is whatever topic you want to discuss. So how to search for income investors might be something you want to talk about. We'll talk about that. 888-99-CHAR is our live listener line every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Quick question here. Looking at a stock, Dave & Buster's, what do you feel about that one? The ticker symbol is PLAY. It's had a great year. They're doing buybacks now and looking for a great future forecast. Thanks. Look forward to your opinion.
Okay, Dave & Buster's Entertainment. I've been to one. Have you been to any? They operate 92 restaurants featuring casual dining and arcades-style games. And they're across these 92 restaurants are across the United States and Canada. So you go and they have arcades and sophisticated games, some simple games, and you eat there too. You do both. So it's kind of an entertainment kind of restaurant-y thingy. Okay, they've been growing their sales 15, 16, 17, 18% for the last three or four quarters in a row, sales. Earnings are going to go 17% this year and 13% next year. And they've been very consistent. It's a $70 stock, going to make $2.76 next year. $2.76 next year. So what is that, a 30 PE approximately? Return equity is very high at 23. Not a lot of debt. Good cash flow. Though they don't pay a dividend. Management owns about 4%. And the funds are net buyers. Have been buying for a while. So it's got all those positive things. Of course, the stock has marched straight up since October, right after, you know, it started to move up faster after the election, presidential election. It's just been going up and up and up and up. So now it's overpriced. Like a lot of stocks in our market, it's overpriced. It deserves to be overpriced. Don't get me wrong here, but does it deserve to be a 30 PE? That seems pricey to me. I would wait for a good pullback before I consider buying it. But it does have really good numbers, really strong company. This is InvestDoc. I'm Steve Peasley. How do people get fooled into buying stocks past their prime? That's a good question. Maybe you have a question about insurance. We're open to anything and everything about your money. 888-99-CHART, how to reach me right now, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Okay, John Bogle is the founder of Vanguard, or at least one of the founders. I don't think he was the founder, I'm not sure. But he has been a proponent of index investing for decades. Index investing, buying the S&P 500, buying the Dow, buying the Russell 2000. Now he's ringing a little warning bell. He's not panicked yet, but he's ringing a little warning bell. This is why. You know, you can buy an index. Let's talk about just the S&P 500. You can buy an index via a mutual fund or an ETF, right? And everybody seems to be indexing these days, and it's not quite that true that much. I think it's like 46% of all investments is an index investor, up from a few years ago of only 36. So it's been increasing in popularity. And that's, it's 46.7, and it was 36, let's see, 3 years ago. 36%. 3 years ago, now it's over 46.7. So that's quite a big jump of about 10% of all investors would be an index. Now, why is that a problem? Think about it for a second. What is indexing? Well, they buy the S&P 500. They buy all 500 stocks and put it in an index. Okay. What drives stocks up? Buyers and sellers, right? If everybody was indexing, there would be no buyers. There would be no sellers. Matter of fact, the only sellers would be the people selling index. How would that hit the market? And the buyers and sellers that are outside the index, and more indexers there are, the buyers and sellers outside the index would have more effect, more volatility. They'd be more impactful because there's not that many. They're narrow, and they'd be focused on sectors or different stocks. Because when everybody is indexing, there's no market. The market is kind of going to be kind of frozen. The only thing that's being bought and sold is the index. How's that going to help drive up stock prices of the overall index? So he said, if there's too many people indexing, indexing won't work, which is almost true. That's a truism for almost anything in the market. Everybody's doing it. It fails to work anymore. Now, he speculates, and remember, he does not know. He speculates that the number has to be closer to 75%, and it's only at 46%. So it's got a ways. I'll tell you, I've been doing this a long time, too. And I can tell you this. Indexing gets very popular when the bull market, the secular bull market's in place, and that's what we are now. Then it gets very unpopular when we hit a secular bear market. And then it seems like the market does nothing but go down for a long time, 3 years plus. Then everybody hates indexing because they never make money. They only lose money. And it goes in that kind of wave. But I will say that the wave has never gone lower, the wave of indexing, never gone lower. It always has gone higher so far in history. It's just as a wave. It's not a straight line. But it is something that interesting that maybe your returns are indexing are going to slow down the more people index. Interesting, huh? And that's from a guy, John Bogle. He is an indexer. He's the one that is a huge proponent of indexing. Let's go to Johnson in San Jose. How you doing, Johnson?
Hey, hi. I'm good. I wanted to ask you about the stock of IBM and when would be a good entry point to buy.
Okay, let's look at IBM, everybody. International Business Machines. You know, they used to be known as Big Blue because they would sell big iron computers. They call them big iron, big computers. Now they're more of an IT and consulting services company. They still sell hardware, but that's not their bread and butter anymore. They're going to make $13.70 this year per share. That's up about 1% from last year. Another up 2% next year to $13.92, and it's a $152 stock. So that should tell you that is not that much overpriced. It's not. But there's no reason for it to be, you know, get excited about it. The only thing you want to buy Big Blue for these days is to get excited about the dividend, 3.9%. And it looks like it has come down to pretty good support between 147 and 150, and it's at 152 right now. So it looks like there's a lot of support right where it is. Right where it is. And if you were going to buy it and buy it for that dividend, you could buy it now, put it in the drawer and just ignore it. And, you know, over time, it'll probably go up. Probably will. But don't think you're going to have huge returns. You're not. You're going to need to be content with the income. This, if you're an income investor, Big Blue looks pretty decent at 3.9% dividend yield. Very, very secure dividend. Very secure. 888-99-CHARGE is our number. Be sure to sign up for our Invest Talk Insiders program. It's a source of good information, up-to-date financial news and insight, and a whole library of timely info sheets and recorded webinars. We are going to have our real estate webinar as an insider that you can see anytime you want. It's not there yet, but it will. It's all free. Just click on the Invest Talk tab on Invest Talk.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now. Our Invest Talk podcast continues. First, a couple of words from KPP Financial and a question for you. When did you last review your entire investment portfolio, not just look briefly over the documents? Steve believes this is something that should be done quarterly, every year at the very least. Why is this so important? You need to make sure that you're achieving the goals you want before you run out of time. And if you're just checking your statements each month and putting them back in the drawer, Steve believes you need to take a closer look. You may be missing opportunities or taking too much risk. Invest an hour with Steve. Start the process going. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. It can be done easily from anywhere in the USA on Skype or telephone. And now let's continue with the podcast. Invest Talk continues a service of KPP Financial for more than 20 years helping Americans plan their retirement years with confidence. Our Invest Talk Live listener line is 888-99-CHART.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. I really appreciate the podcast. Thank you. I had a quick question on a position, DEO, Diageo Spirits. I'm interested in your perspective. Appreciate it. Appreciate everything you guys do. Thank you.
Okay, this is a big company out of the United Kingdom, British manufacturer for alcohol beverages such as vodka, whiskey, rum. It's very big, $77 billion. Beer, it's all this stuff sold worldwide. Anyways, they're big. They're going to make $5.82 in next year after making $5.40 this year, after making $5.06 last year. But in 2013, 14, 15, they were making $6 or more per share. So it, you know, it's not growing that much. Sales actually have been shrinking slowly, and but while earnings have been going up slowly. So that means they're getting more efficient at what they do. But sales have not been that strong. The stock is $122.71 today. That is about, you know, for $5.82, $122, we're talking about a pretty, you know, 21, 22 PE, and the five-year range is 17 to 24. It's kind of on the upper end of that. Pays a 2.5% dividend. You never have to worry about that. They'll continue to pay that and probably continue to raise it. It's very good return on equity. The company is very strong. The company itself is strong. It's just having trouble increasing sales. So you buy this, it's a big blue. I mean, remember, $77 billion company. It's a mega cap company. You buy it for the dividend, and the dividend's only 2.5%. It's not the best dividend, but you certainly don't buy it for growth. So then you want to buy it cheap, and I'm telling you, this is not cheap. I'd rather, you know, I'd rather see you buy it around the $100 area. Okay, and will it get there? I don't know. I can't tell you that, but that's where it would be much more reasonable price. And even then, you know, you're talking about an 18 PE. Well, the five-year range is what, 17 to 24. I would buy it at the low range of its PE range, the low part of its PE range. That's where I'd buy this, not here. Okay? Be sure to sign up for our Invest Talk Insiders program. Well, we already talked about that. I don't want to talk about that again. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278. Some truisms for you, the investors. Number one truism, leverage can be deadly. What is leverage? Leverage, whenever you hear the word leverage, think borrowing. Now, it can be in different shapes and forms, but it's borrowing. You're borrowing money to buy something. For instance, the most common leverage we have out there is a homeowner borrowing money to buy the house. Think about this. If the homeowner borrows 90% of the money and the house goes up 10%, he only put 10% down, think how beneficial that leverage was. And just the opposite going the other direction. Where we had big leverage was in the financial markets in the crash of 2008. Because look, it drove companies out of business. So leverage can be very deadly. Successful investing is hard. It's not simple. It's not easy. It's hard. Being a successful investor is hard. That's a truism. Value investing works over a long time, period of time. Value investing beats growth investing over a long period of time. But growth investing can be very exciting because it's the speed of movement of the market. And one more. Overweighting a position, no matter how good it is always a bad idea. Is always a bad idea. Even if you're successful, even if you make more money, amount of money out of it, it's still a bad idea. Why? Because then you think it's a good idea and you're going to keep trying it, and one of these days you're going to lose a ton of money because you overinvested. So be very, very careful. When you go to InvestTalk Insider page, you can get up to date in seconds. Financial news and background information from trusted sources, plus our insider articles, features, a whole library of webinars. You can join up. It's free. Just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
What are the factors that affect your risk tolerance? Time horizons, the amount of time you have to meet your financial goals. Cash, how much do you depend on your investments to meet day-to-day expenses? And then the emotional factors, your emotional response to changes in the value of your investments. Take the test and get the answers to these questions. Just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then look for free risk analysis.
Hey guys, this is Chris from Mississippi. I got a question for you. I'm pretty much 100% invested right now, but I have about 20% in different hedging vehicles, you know, like inverse of the Dow and S&P. Should I be looking at those hedging vehicles as cash, as when if we have a market correction, I will sell those hedging vehicles, take profit on them, and then I could buy with those profits, that money I sold those hedging vehicles, and reinvest? Is that the way you should be looking at hedging vehicles? Or is a hedging vehicle a buy and hold thing, just so your overall portfolio stays in that condition? I don't know. Just wondering how you guys look at your hedges you use. Thanks a lot. You guys have a great day. I really appreciate your program, and I'm a podcast listener.
Okay, that's a good question. A hedge means that you're betting the against the direction, and the direction is up, so you're hedging that direction. But you can hedge the other way too, just betting against the direction. And I will say this: there is a strategy out there for hedging. There's a strategy that people do hedge constantly forever. I don't look at hedging that way. I look at it as a short-term protection, almost like insurance. But short-term in nature, even though that short-term could be a year. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be, you know, a month or a week, but not a long-term investment strategy for me. And I look at it as you described in your first, when you first asked the question. I look at hedging as cash to use eventually to get long in the market. Because the market itself has a long-term bias to the upside, okay? And I want to be on that bias at some point. I want to stay on that bias for long periods of time. I just think the market's overvalued right now. And some people disagree with me, by the way. Not everybody agrees on this. And this is another truism about the stock market. Not everybody agrees. If everybody agreed, then there wouldn't be buyers and sellers. There'd be either just buyers or sellers. And that's never going to work. It's always different differences of opinion. So I look at it as a hedge, as a well of cash eventually to buy stocks I want to own when they get cheap? Okay? Good question, though. I really like that question. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, Macy's department store fell 8% today. Their stock fell 8% today. And that sparked a pretty broad sell-off in that whole sector. And that sector, consumer discretionary sector, is the worst sector, the weakest sector in the S&P 500 and all the subsectors in the S&P 500. So I mentioned this before. The companies that filed bankruptcy are Rue 21, Payless Shoes, Wet Seal, American Apparel, Aeropostale, and Sports Authority. But how about those stores that have debt that are in trouble? There's a long list of those, long lists, including J. Crew, Sears Holdings, Gymboree, Neiman Marcus, J.C. Penney's, Ann Taylor. You notice these names are big names. These are not just small, unknown companies. These are big companies that are having trouble. And I can't say and will not say it's all because of Amazon, but Amazon is the catalyst and a big part of their problems. Because everybody's buying online. What's interesting is everybody still wants the experience to go shopping. A lot of people still like that shopping experience, but then they go away from the store and buy it cheap online somewhere. So that means your shopping experience is going to have to change and convince you to buy somehow. And I've mentioned before, that means stores are going to have to change how they do business. There's no option. If you can't find a solution through the internet, you're going to have to find a solution in the store. Some of the solution might be you can't get these clothes through the internet, or you can't get these goods, whatever they are, through the internet. They're too high-end or too something, and they're not offered through the internet somehow. How is it going to make it work? It's got to work that way. Some special kind of method to get the customers to buy. If it's not through the internet, you could have an internet solution, still have your store, but then the internet. As a matter of fact, I told you before, Amazon is opening a store, so obviously they're going the opposite direction, but maybe it's just an experiment with one store, who knows. Here's an investing term you should know. What is net asset value? Most people refer to it as NAV. What's NAV, net asset value? Net asset value is value per share of a mutual fund or an exchange-traded ETF on a specific date or time. So you're saying, what's the NAV of that mutual fund? The net asset value. What is the value of the holdings? What's the price? What's the price of that mutual fund or ETF? Now, normally, if you're dealing with a stock, you say, well, what's the stock price? Well, an NAV refers to mutual funds or ETFs that have a bunch of holdings. And so they average those holdings in there and they come up with a net asset value of what they're holding. Okay, so that's what NAV is, net asset value. To see more in-depth definition and examples, just go to our friends at investopedia.com. Pretty easy. Let's go to BJ in Fremont. He wants to talk about hedging too. How you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good, Steve, and thanks for taking my call. Always enjoy your show.
Thank you.
So my question is, you just mentioned about something about hedging. So just enlighten us, like, what are the hedging methods you are using at this point? Okay. Are you using at all, and what are those? Give us some idea on that.
Well, I won't specifically tell you how we're hedging, but I'll give you the common methods that are used for hedging. A simple hedge is you own a stock, let's say you own IBM, you own 100 shares. You can hedge that stock off specific, but you can say, I can short 100 shares of IBM and own 100 shares of IBM at the same time. That's a one-to-one hedge. So if IBM goes up or down, you won't make money and you won't lose money. Why would you do that? Well, you would do that, BJ, because maybe you bought IBM at $2 a share, and now it's $100 a share. You don't want to sell it because you don't want a tax consequence, but you also worry that it's overvalued right now. So you just you want to hold on to it, but not lose money holding on to it. That's a perfect hedge. A more common hedge, a hedge that we are using, and I won't tell you specifically, but you can short an index. There, almost all the indexes, you can short them, meaning you think that the overall index is going to go down, but still hold on to your individual stocks. Okay, you own those individual stocks. You don't want to sell them, but you feel the whole market might go down. You're hoping yours will hold up. So you maybe short 20% of your portfolio, or 30%, or 50%, whatever you want to. And this protects that amount of your portfolio from going down, because that 20% will go up if the whole market goes down. That's a very common hedge. Okay, there's another hedge out there where you short a weak sector against your strong sector stocks. So you can short by sector. You know, let's say you think, well, I think the utility sector is really going to do bad. Well, you can short that particular sector. So there's different ways to do it. And it depends on what you're comfortable with and what you know. BJ, thank you for the call. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. And, you know, it's difficult. When do you get out of the hedge? Yeah. It's difficult to know that. When to know to get out. You have to have some triggers in there. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Apple is betting on three technologies you're going to adopt. And they think it's going to be adopted by the mainstream. Three technologies. And, of course, you know, they didn't invent these technologies. Matter of fact, they're falling behind in some of them. Virtual reality is one of them. Smart speakers is another. And peer-to-peer payments. Peer-to-peer payments. Now, VR, virtual reality, you probably, you know, I don't necessarily, I think, have to go into that. But maybe you don't know what a smart speaker is. Smart speaker, you've seen the ads on TV where you just talk to a device in your room and it talks back to you. Say, turn on lights or turn on the TV or decrease the temperature by 5 degrees. You talk to it. That's a smart speaker. Now, Apple is going to be more focused on music coming out of that smart speaker. You know, turn on this music and the speaker being high quality. And peer-to-peer payments, you know, that's just a payment system. You know, Apple Pay. So those are three things, VR, smart speakers, and peer-to-peer, that Apple is betting on going forward. Now, this whole sector of all three of those things is not very big yet. Not very big. But they'll be focusing on it. You're listening to Invest Talk. We'd love to hear from you before the hour's up. Our number is 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Tom in San Jose. How you doing, Tom?
I'm good, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, you're doing a great show.
Thank you.
I have a question about the stock BT, B as in boy, T as in Tom.
Okay. You want to buy it, sell it? What's your question?
Yeah, I'm thinking of selling, so.
Selling it?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a very good example. British Petroleum, BT Group, a British provider of local exchange, wireless, broadband, internet, and TV and network IT services. BT. Okay, it's a great example of basing. You probably heard me mention that term before. Basing is when a stock goes sideways. It comes down, goes sideways, or goes up, and go sideways for a long period of time. And this has been, this fell sharply back in late January from $24 all the way down to like 19 something. And then moved up, down, all within like a point, you know, 1 point range. And it's still there. It's down 1971 now. And this is a stock that's basing, looking for a bottom. So what you can say, Tom, is it's put in a bottom. What you can't say is that mean it's not going to rise or will it break down through that bottom? But what you can do, I would probably hold on to it until it broke below the base, which is only a point or so.
Okay.
If it doesn't break below that base, the longer it goes sideways, the better chance you have of it breaking up. Breaking up.
Okay.
So I would, you know, it's a big company. It's not going to go out of business. It pays a very nice dividend. If you're patient, I think you'll be rewarded with a higher price. I do.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I was thinking of that. Being patient, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Appreciate the call. They're making $2 a share, by the way. It's a $19 stock. So you're what? A little bit below 10 PE. So it's fairly inexpensive, and it has a very nice dividend. I'd probably just hold on to it at this point. BT is the symbol, everybody. BT. Have you been paying? How many out there watch the economic calendar? I'm a big believer in looking at the economic statistics that come out each week. Doesn't mean you have to be an expert, but I really like looking at the quarterly productivity numbers, which have been pretty poor for several years, a number of years, pretty poor. So the first quarter productivity number came out, and here it is, you know, middle part, end of, toward the end of part of the second quarter. So they look really bad. And this was a revision. Usually the first quarter productivity number comes out right after and then revised about 30, 45 days later. And so this is the revision of the first quarter GDP number. And the first quarter GDP number came out initially as -0.6%, which is really, really ugly. They revised it to being flat, not down anymore. That's not good either, people. It's better than it was, but that's not good. At the same time, unit labor costs rose 2.2%, and that's a revision down too from 3%. So unit labor costs, remember the cost of labor and how much you produce per unit cost of labor talks about how productive you are and whether we have productivity. So salaries were revised downward, at least the unit labor cost was revised downward, and all that did was make the productivity go flat. We need, our normal productivity is 2 to 3%. And we haven't seen normal for a long, long time. And why is this important? Because it goes to everybody's standard of living, yours and my standard of living. More things are costing more money, but we can't afford them more and more and more because we're not being productive enough, you know, and it just costing more. So not a pleasant. Also, the ISM non-manufacturing number came out, and it was down a little bit from 57.5 to 56.9. That's just for May. And remember, we are a non-manufacturing society. At least it's more important. We manufacture a lot of things. But that number is kind of important, kind of weakened. Don't like that. Just don't like it. No warning signs yet. Just something to watch. Time's up for the hour. Before we go, a reminder, I will be in San Jose on June 14th. I meet with listeners and talk about our portfolio, your retirement portfolio. June 14th. You can reserve your hour. Go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. Remember, June 14th in San Jose. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thanks for being with us today. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.